You are the most dangerous man I've ever met. You're wacky.
No, I'm not wacky. I'm a genius.
Better good, baby. Down with government.
There must be accountability. There is going to be accountability in this case.
What a dumb thing to do. I bet you wouldn't have done anything like this if Mom and Dad were here.
Yes, I'd have gotten away with it too. If it wasn't for these blasted kids and their dog.
The Senate has agreed to go along with President Carter's controversial request for planes for three Mideast nations. We'll have details.
Good morning. Honduras jets have begun bombing 7-8 positions along the Nicaragua-Honduras border.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Sandinista officers at the front maintain bombs are falling on Nicaraguan soil and claim they've never crossed the border.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together.
Meanwhile, from 150 miles away, 3,500 American troops are in place or en route.
I'm beginning to see a pattern here.
To begin what the military calls Operation Golden Falcon. Joint military operations so hastily called, American officers say they're having to scramble to develop the exercises in order to keep the troops busy today.
Second time in the lives of most of us, we are at war.
The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
We have been forced into a conflict, for we are called with our allies.
Army officers say the missile found sometime last week has been inspected at Roswell, New Mexico, and sent to Wright Field, Ohio, for further inspection.
All in all, I'd say we've been very lucky around here. Nothing to do now but wait for orders from the authorities and relax.
And you're listening to 91.5 FM WRPI Troy. From the studios of WRPI in Troy, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, what happens when you mix the two, and we're like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter. Fongaboo, Phil, and Lil are sitting across the room from me. Say hi, gang.
Hi.
Hey.
And we will be your hosts this evening as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode number 41 of Little Brother, dated the 13th of April, 2002. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. And the show is Little Brother. The topic is technology. If you'd like to chime in, please feel free to do so at area code 518-276-6248. That number again, 518-276-6248. Of course, we need to remind you before we get too carried away here that the opinions and views expressed in the show are strictly those of the participants, not necessarily those of WRPI staff, management, Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, or the Rensselaer Student Union. And that responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request airtime for a rebuttal. The number, once again, 518-276-6248. Or if you want to send an email, you can do that. My email address is critter@verizoneatspoop.com. critter@verizoneatspoop, all one word, .com. Or you can send snail mail. The snail mail address is Chuck Ritter, care of WRPI, 1 WRPI Plaza, Box 31, Troy, New York, 12180. Okay. Let's get started. I'm going to kick off with a couple items from the Risks Digest, unless you wanted to kick off with one there. Oh, how's that?
I have one here. This one's. I didn't get to look all the way through it, but it looks pretty interesting here. Announcing Immunix Snack Guard.
Oh, this would be one of the ones
April
from the
Fools?
April 1st lot. Yeah.
Is that it? WireX is pleased to announce the latest addition to the Immunix family of security tools, Snack Guard. Snack Guard effectively guards your favorite snacks in the break room from snack-smashing attacks, the predations of other hungry engineers. This protection is especially vital in these trying times of unemployment when nomadic tribes of hunter-gatherer geeks roam the halls of once mighty.coms in search of food and caffeine. Following on Stackguard's canary defense, Snackguard employs Wirex's patent-pending turkey defense. When Snackguard detects the gobbling noise of some turkey scarfing down your favorite Pop-Tarts and heavily caffeinated beverages, it issues a pink slip, halting the gobbler. While Snackguard is effective in defending your snacks, it is not without costs. Snackguard increases runtime when you are running to catch the bus or the elevator, and that successful defense of your snacks tends to increase programmer's butt. Excessive consumption of caffeinated beverages without intervening bathroom breaks may also induce personal buffer overflows. While Snackguard is free speech, it is not free beer. You may modify and distribute this gag as you wish, but go buy your own brewskis.
This wasn't happen to be developed by the guys at the Rochester Institute of Technology computer house.
It sounds like something that would come out of there.
Who already were known to have created an IP enabled soda machine.
Yeah. Oh, the IP enabled soda machine has been around for eons. I don't remember exactly what its capabilities are. I'll have to look it up, but
I took a picture with it.
To some effect, you're able to if you have the correct access, you're able to tell the machine to dispense a soda and then walk down the hall and pick it up just like it was a shared printer. I don't know. Let's see.
Does it take that long to vend a soda that you got to be concerned about that?
Well, when you have
but
internet
it's a
connected.
Cool thing to do.
But how does the machine know that you had the money to pay for the soda that it's vending? Is it a free snack?
You had the right code.
You had the right code.
So yeah. Theoretically, you have the appropriate authority to request a soda for free. Soda.
It's a free soda for those with access.
I wonder if anybody's hacked it yet.
Well, I mean, with it being IP enabled, I wonder, does it have spooling capability for multiple jobs?
I hope so.
It would kind of have to, wouldn't it? Oh, let's see here. Eric Murray had an item that he submitted to the Risk Digest. He says, in the last week, I have run up against two different risks related to anti-spam blacklists. These lists have grown from the old Maps RBL system and are now run by a number of people. ORDB lists 15 different blacklists run by 12 different people or organizations. For the background, I run a small network that supports my consulting business and a few mailing lists. I've been a Unix geek since 1985, and I've run some very large networks. And I've been active in network security since 1991. I've used RBL, and I distribute my own anti-spam freeware. I hate spam. Last week, I got some bounced email from one of my lists. The recipient system was rejecting it as spam, and the error message pointed me to ordb.org. I was surprised to see this since I'm not running an open relay, and there's never been spam sent from my network. At ordb.org, I discovered that while my network was not actually listed by ORDB itself...
Well, did he eat spam ever?
I don't know. It was listed by blackholes.510.sg.com, which is somehow linked to our ORDB. I followed their website's process for getting off the list, which is to send an email to the maintainer, and he reported that my network range is within a block owned by Vario, and that he was blocking all of Vario because of a particular spammer that Vario hasn't gotten rid of. I replied, all of Vario for one spammer. What about everybody else who's not a spammer? Couldn't you be more accurate with your list and maybe not list the net block that I'm presently in, which in reality is owned by Mir, not Vario? And his answer, too bad for you. You should move. The risk here is that in using a blacklist or service that checks many blacklists, one might be blocking a lot more than spammers. Blacklists might not be following the policy that you think they're following, and may be blocking address ranges out of spider laziness, not because of actual spam. Yesterday, I started getting bounces from another list subscriber. The error messages said that I was an insecure site, according to ORBZ, another blacklist service. ORBZ was taken off the net yesterday due to legal threats. Evidently, the software that makes the check treats ORBZ as a whitelist, and since it's not answering, it is rejecting mail that shouldn't reject. The site in question doesn't have aliases for postmaster, admin, or root, so I can't even notify them of their problem. The risk? Poorly written checks of blacklists can produce unintended results when the list fails. The temptation to go all out to kill spam needs to be tempered with the realization that communication is what makes the internet work. If you don't care how much real mail you reject in your drive to block spam, then simply turn off your mailer and you won't get any spam. You got another one?
Yeah, this one's actually in response to one of the April 1st postings, I guess.
Oh, is this a response to the car?
Yeah, it's just because it's funny doesn't mean it isn't real.
Yeah, I read that one last week, actually.
Oh, did you? Okay, then I...
No, I didn't read that one. I read the one that led up to
okay,
this.
Okay, so here's the response to that one. It says, in this year's April Fool edition, risks, our fearless moderator reprinted that old item that purports to be from the auto industry. If we made cars like computers, we'd always be crashing, rebooting, upgrading, etc. In particular, item 10 stated, you'd have to press the start button to turn the engine off. Just because it's funny doesn't mean it's not real. The automobile industry is copying all the worst features of the computer industry, ignoring all the advances in user interface design and all the lessons about safety. I fear that someone in the industry a few years ago missed the significance of the date April 1 in the United States. They took it seriously. I point your attention to the new BMW Series 7 automobile. The key is simply a personal identifier that instructs the car to adjust the seat, mirrors, steering column, etc. Isn't this the one with the commercial where the guy runs into the house and drags his wife out?
I don't think that's it.
Oh, okay.
That one was...
No, that's an equally lame
feature. Oh, there's a Volkswagen.
Feature.
Okay.
And he's getting all excited over windows being able to be opened with a turn of a key.
Yeah, that's equally lame, but that's high tech.
To the key owner's preferences. Okay. To start the engine, push the start button. To turn the engine off, push the same start button. That takes care of point number 10 in the joke. To be fair, the button is actually labeled start-stop, but then again, so too should the MS Windows button. But it gets worse. The new 7 Series BMW no longer has all those knobs and buttons that clutter up the dashboard. You know, where each knob does one thing that you can count on. Instead, it has a single controller located on the center console that functions similarly to a computer mouse. It drives a display in the center of the dashboard. It is called the iDrive. I for intuitive. Don't get me started on intuitive. You know what's intuitive? Fear of heights. Everything else we call intuitive, such as walking or using a pencil, took years of practice. Is that what we want? A control that takes years of practice? That was a little side run that the guy, rant that the guy wrote there. The iDrive Plus display, says the sale brochure, is a user-friendly interface that offers quick access to over 700 settings, plus navigation system maps, phone book listings, and more. One control, one display. 700 settings? What were they thinking? As USA Today put it, it manages to complicate simple functions beyond belief. Auto Review says iDrive is not simple no matter how clean it looks to the naked eye. Our advice is to retain basic manual controls for functions that are used every day. I work in the field of usability and safety. I am appalled. I do, however, have to keep an open mind. After all, I have not tested it. I did sit in the front seat in a showroom, but with everything turned off. I should drive it down the highway, or better, a crowded city street, and test the iDrive. Set a new radio station, check the directions to my destination, see how much fuel I have left, adjust the temperature of the interior, things I might actually do while driving. Only then can I pass judgment. Until then, I'm simply delighted that I am not planning to buy one. Alas, BMW promises that the features will migrate downward to all their autos. Beware of April Fool jokes. They may come back to haunt you.
Remember, progress before safety.
Go ahead, Fong.
Kind of reminds me, having talked about IP-enabled machines and the comparison of computers to cars, wasn't Mercedes one of the six companies that was granted a Class A block of IPs, which is pretty huge?
I don't know.
I think I heard that, and they were going to assign an IP to every car.
Are there enough IP addresses in a Class A block to do that?
If they go hexadecimal.
Well, if they go hexadecimal, there's still just as many IP addresses as if they went decimal.
I don't know.
It's just they're two digits instead of three.
I guess he can be pretty frivolous when you have a Class A worth of...
Now, I got to ask you something. I've got to ask you something. How many possible directions can we go off in on this stupid iDrive idea? I'm going to start with one of my pet peeves here.
Mm-hmm.
Knock that off.
Sorry.
Phil's making obscene gestures as we speak. The first thing that comes to my mind is what happens when you break the knob? You know, okay, fine. You push the button on the radio a little too hard. The radio button falls in. You don't use that radio button anymore.
Right, and that doesn't control
But the radio, for the most
everything.
Part, is still usable. The windshield wipers are still usable. You can still shift gears. You can still signal a turn. You can still turn the heat up and down, and the fan up and down, and the air conditioning on and off.
We need voice control as a backup.
Or how about a receptacle for a droid?
And you know what's more? You can still use all those functions without fear of death from crash while trying to make them work.
Yeah, which brings us to point number two. And point number two is I've been rather actually irritated with the tendency of the direction of the design of cellular phones, because we seem to be going away from single function buttons and into things that are menu driven. Well, one of the big concerns that we have right now is keeping your eyes on the road while trying to drive and talk on the phone at the same time. And I find it getting progressively worse. The first phone I had a nice button on it that when you push it, it would bring up your telephone directory. And you could pick things off of it in one step with only taking your eyes off the road for a brief moment. The phone I have now, you have to go first through a menu and then pick the phone directory off of that menu and then take it from there.
And the worst part is, you know, they won't support the old phone, so it's not like you can just hang on to your old phone and keep using it. You've got to upgrade to these complicated machines.
Now, my wife has an even newer phone, which has a four-direction button pad on it that you have to use to navigate the menus to find the correct option.
What's next? And, trackballs?
And it's been done. It's been done. Yes, the same cellular provider is selling one that they call
Glide Points.
No, it's not called. Glide Point Pad would be the next logical step, wouldn't it?
I hate those things.
Shoot, I can't think what it's called. It's called Mouse Point or something like that. It's got a variable touchpad on it. You know, press it harder, it moves faster. How are you supposed to navigate that without looking? I ask you.
Yeah.
Mm. We need a telepathic interface.
Or how about those translucent heads-up displays are sounding nice around now.
Actually, I like those. I like those. It's just, you got to be able to find the controls. You know? I don't know. Anyway, here's something that that I grabbed because of the fact that it was a refreshing change from the way things typically go. This came out of the Advertiser, which is it's somewhere in Australia. They said, new machines installed in Adelaide convenience stores make the illegal copying of the latest CDs and computer software, which costs artists and software designers millions of dollars, as easy as buying a loaf of bread. The stores have begun installing coin-operated CD duplication machines fitted with software to circumvent anti-copying measures built into some CDs. The copycat CD duplication machines charge just $5 Australian, plus the purchase of a $2 blank disc, to make digitally identical copies of CDs in under 10 minutes. The machines are already in a number of city convenience stores, as well as printing and copying shops. Sales of home CD copying machines, known as burners, also are booming, with one city store selling more than 100 a month. Australian music expert Glenn A. Baker yesterday branded the copying music from Australian brands in particular as morally reprehensible, and he couldn't imagine anything more potentially devastating for the music industry. Sounds typical. Of course, I think the music industry needs a little devastation, but we won't go there. There is no other product that is subjected to this kind of wholesale theft, and there's nothing else that so many people think, we can just take this. The machines are able to operate under the same legislation as public photocopiers, where the burden of responsibility for copyright breaches lies with the user and not the owner of the equipment. Hello, U.S. Congress. Are you listening to this? Adelaide convenience store owner Jim Stavros says that the coin-operated machines were popular among young people. If people ask, we tell them it's illegal to break copyrights and there are warnings on the machines, but what they copy is up to them, he said. A spokesman for the machine's Melbourne manufacturer, Paul Teat, said that the CD copier was no different from a video recorder, audio recorder, and photocopier. Music industry piracy investigation spokesman Michael Speck said illegal copying already cost the Australian industry $70 million a year. Copyright investigators would take notice of in-store copyright infringements, he said. Zach Kingston of Adelaide folk duo Linus, which is about to record its second album, said the new machines threatened to destroy smaller acts. Interesting theory. We rely on the money we make from the CDs to make a living from what we do, and if people copy for free, then that disappears, he said. Think that's accurate?
Well, it says they have, like, copy protections, or it thwarts different copy protection schemes. I wonder if you copied, say, like, a PlayStation disc that has errors purposely on it that the players search for in order to determine if it's a legitimate disc or not. Because I heard some of the new burners, you can actually copy the PlayStation discs and then you don't need a mod chip. I'm not sure if that machine would be the same.
I don't know. That's a good question. The particular thing I was questioning was the assertion that it would
destroy smaller bands.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know that when I like a band that's lesser known, I know that they actually get their pay from performances I go to, from buying their CDs, and from buying their T-shirts and whatnot. And I have to admit, I did copy some Seven Nations songs off of Nutella, but they were ones that I had already purchased the CD for.
Oh,
and we were just adding them into a mix. I mean, I've bought all of their CDs, if for no other reason than just to support them.
Right, exactly. But the way I see it, if people are able to start spreading the CDs around from the small bands, it spreads the news of the existence of the band.
Right, and then everybody knows that you need to buy their CDs to support them, and I think that most people would. You know,
right,
just like
exactly.
The fellow was saying on your show last week at the tail end, we were listening. I didn't get the call in, but yeah, he was saying that people know that that is how those people get their living to make that music for you. So they go and they buy the CDs. Yeah,
right. Exactly. Now I would say also it kind of leads into another interesting thing that I wanted to talk about. The music I played before the show was. Off of an interesting item called the Droplift Project, which what they're doing, these are a bunch of found sound artists. So basically, we're talking about similar concept to Negative Land as far as the overall sound goes. These are found sound artists who have started a process of making their music. Putting it up on a website, but it's not just that the website is the primary form of distribution. People who want to further spread the music are encouraged to take the music, download it, burn it onto CDs, and do inverse shoplifting. That is to say, take it, wander into a record store, and deposit it into the bins. They call this droplifting. And to drive the point home, they give you 30 tracks, which are just perfectly fell out a 74-minute CD. They're already downloadable as WAV files, so that you even get CD quality. And they provide you with three different formats, all of the CD and cover art. So you actually can produce a professional-looking package and drop it in a record store.
So what do they foresee happening when a shopper in a store that's had the CD drop lifted into, what do they foresee happening at the point that an individual finds the CD in the racks?
My estimate? Mass confusion. If the CD is actually enticing enough to get somebody to pick it up and bring it up to a register, it's going to produce an interesting degree of confusion in the clerk in that there would be no
UPC.
Bingo.
There would be no price.
Bingo.
It would not be listed in their inventory.
Bingo.
They would be unable to charge them for this CD.
Bingo.
They would be unable to tell them how they came to have this CD.
Bingo.
They would be unable to know what to do with this CD whatsoever.
Bingo.
Yeah.
And my take on it is, and this is not, I'm not casting aspersions against record store clerks in particular in this one, but...
No, we love record store clerks.
The fact of the matter is, The fact of the matter is, frontline people, as a general rule, are not paid.
That was nice Fawn's head.
After Fawn's all head the tries, the you've had to keep things quiet with Phil with his creaking chair and you with your change making. All the jingles and creaks you've tried to keep out of that microphone, and now look what you've done.
It's Foley. Come on.
And you dropped your change
it's
all over.
It's Nat Sound.
And as I was saying, they're generally the frontline people, I think, are not paid enough to actually care.
No, they won't give a rat's ass.
They would probably see
Wait, can I say that?
Yes, you can say that.
Okay.
Well, you already said it.
Well, yeah, but now I just didn't know if you had to hit the button. You know.
No, I don't have to hit the button for that one, and
okay.
I didn't hit the button.
So, I mean, they don't care.
And so what's likely to happen, I think, after the mass confusion sets in and then after the mass confusion subsides, the form in which the mass confusion will subside, the clerk will say, look, there's no code on it. I can't ring it up. You really want it? Just take it. Get out of here.
Well, are you familiar with UPCs and how they work?
Marginally, yeah.
I mean, do UPCs ultimately, are they... Do they have a universal readout, or are they kind of relative to the store system that you're dealing with?
It depends. It's kind of like IP addresses. There are some reserved blocks.
Oh, okay.
But generally the first six digits of the UPC code are identify the manufacturer.
Oh, okay.
And the next five identify the product, and the last digit is a checksum.
So could somebody who's producing one of these dropless CDs throw in a UPC symbol so that when they do ring it up, it shows up as like marshmallow fluff or something like that? That would be even like, oh, marshmallow fluff, $1.99, all right.
I wonder if you could somehow scan in and put on your CDs before you drop them in the record store.
See,
the UPC.
Why scan it? I can generate them.
The UPC for Marshmallow Fluff wouldn't come up as anything because in their database, the only UPCs they have scanned in are the CDs that they have on the shelves.
So?
That's true, but occasionally grocery stores do sell CDs.
Well,
right,
that's true.
But what I'm saying is, if you,
Kmart
you
does.
Could take a UPC
you could
from
drop them at Kmart.
To like the Backstreet Boys,
yeah,
and you can affix that onto the CD, so when they ring it up, it'll come up as the Backstreet Boys.
But then
Boys,
people will have
your...
to pay for it, like full price. You want to find something cheap and dinky and silly, something that'll make the clerk say, "What?" But the person will only have to pay like at most a couple bucks.
All right, so you just, like, if they sell mouse pads for, like, 99 cents or something, you take the UPC off that and just photocopy it.
Yeah, you just look around the store for something amusing and cheap and and buy it and run home with the UPC.
Huh.
Generate more on your computer.
Would you find drop lifting to be a risky endeavor, do you think? I don't know. I wonder, could you get mistaken for
shoplifter?
Yeah, if you're walking in and you have a CD on you and...
I don't know. I suppose it would depend on how you on how you approached it.
Mm.
Generally, you can get away with just about anything if you look like you belong where you are.
Mm. Right, as long as you walk in looking like you know what.
As
you're
long
doing.
As you don't look like you're as long as you don't look like you're doing something suspicious.
So as long as
hell,
I wear,
that's
like,
how the terrorists are getting away with everything. They
as
just
long
walk
as I,
around like.
So maybe I should put on a bowling shirt and some black rimmed glasses before I go in there.
Yeah.
At any rate, we're up at the top of the hour, so I need to take a quick break here. You're listening to 91.5 FM WRPI in Troy, and I should have announced at the start of the show that the opening track was by a group called Project Data Control, and it's called Blame the Media. And this track that I'm going to play during the break here is by Reggae Death Squad, and it is called Rub My Face.
Rub my face. Pat my face. Rub my face. Pat my face. Rub my face. Pat my face. Rub my face. Pat my face.
Sex Machine.
I think Bootsy learned a lot from me. When I met him, he was playing a lot of bass.
Sex Machine.
The ifs, ands, and the buts.
Sex Machine. Yeah, he's right.
I got him to see the importance of the one in funk.
Yeah.
The downbeat at the beginning of every bar.
That's right.
I got him to key in on the dynamic parts of the one.
That's right.
Instead of playing all around it.
Yeah.
Then he could do all of his stuff in the right places after the one.
That's absolutely correct.
Rub my face. Pat my face. Rub my face. Pat my face. Rub my face. Pat my face. Rub my face. Pat my face.
Sex Machine. You couldn't jump out in the audience and freak
Sex
out
Machine.
And act crazy, you know, like that's what it was
Sex
going
Machine.
To, you know, and that's what
Sex
we wanted
Machine.
To do, you know, we just wanted to have a
Sex Machine.
Low down, hold down,
Sex
and,
Machine.
You know, drip
Sex
until
Machine.
You wet type party.
Sex Machine.
Hello, this is Ricardo Montalbán.
Hello, I'm Gerald McRaney.
Now let's do it with an unloaded gun.
Then there's nothing but safe bullet. Then there's nothing but safe bullet.
Then there's nothing but safe bullet. You're stuff on my face.
Then there's nothing but safe bullet.
During this period, you should try not to breathe. Every breath makes your body move slightly. Okay, go ahead and try it.
Rub my face. Pat my face. Rub my face. Pat my face. Rub my face. Pat my face. Rub, 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 rub. Pat, 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 pat my face.
While this patient will require further care, the emergency is over.
And we're back to Little Brother. If you want to throw in your 2 cents worth, please feel free to. Area code 518-276-6248. Oh, you guys don't have to pay up. You guys belong here.
You know what I'm thinking?
What are you thinking?
I'm thinking, why fight it? Why don't we just declare this the Foley episode?
The Foley episode?
Yeah.
Foley?
Yeah. Well, like, Foley is sound effects that are created non-synthetically.
Non-synthetically or created synthetically?
Non-synthetically.
Non-synthetically.
Exactly.
Oh, yes. What with the,
like you want
what
the sound
creaking of the chair?
You
and
want
the
sound of change clanking, so you take out some change and...
I got you. Like if you're the sound effects man. I got you.
Hey, why not?
It's the episode of Foley and the cans opening and the people drinking.
For instance, like if I want the sound of a...
Oh, I just spilled soda on myself.
A man in agony... I stabbed
no.
Phil.
Who's got the next story?
I do. Okay, this one actually caught my eye because it just seems like sort of an offbeat story. But the one underneath it also I'm going to want to read it. They're both short.
Yeah, go for it.
Because the one underneath it absolutely outrages me. But Gillette's Mach 3 creates sales bonanza for thieves. Razor burn. Runaway popularity of Gillette's Mach 3 creates a sales bonanza for thieves. Oh. Says the same thing over again. Look at that. Gillette is taking steps to stem the flow of stolen Mach 3 products. Perhaps the most important, Cisnall says, is a pioneering anti-theft technology consortium at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, sponsored by Gillette, Procter & Gamble, and other large consumer products companies. The MIT scientists are developing a microchip that, once embedded in the packaging of the Mach 3 and other products, would allow the product to be tracked from factory to warehouse to retailer and everywhere in between. The chip, which began a one-year field test in Oklahoma in October, will allow Gillette security officials to scan products for sale at a flea market and determine where they came from.
The microchip will give you a cleaner, closer shave.
It seems like... it just seems like a whole lot of effort for like a $3... Well, it's more than $3, but... just it's like such a small price... product. I don't know. It just seems a little... It's like swatting a fly with a sledgehammer. Okay, the next one is Yahoo Group Spam Alert.
You know
now,
what they could do?
What?
If they're worried about theft, just start making an inferior product. Then no one will want it.
Actually, I've tried Mach 3, and let me tell you, I don't know. It didn't seem that superior to me.
But, oh, come on.
No, it didn't. It didn't work them any better, really. At least for me. But, you know, well, it's made for
when
men.
You're
so
when you're a Wookiee.
When you're a Wookiee, it makes all the difference
story,
in the world.
Let me tell you.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. I didn't really give it the real rough, you know, field test there. Okay, Yahoo group spam alert. Now, the reason this one concerns me is because, as you may or may not know, I don't know if I've told you, but I actually have put up two of my own websites now. One is for personal use, and one is actually a mental health informational site. And on that site, I put up a whole page dedicated to, you know, email support groups. And most of them are through Yahoo groups.
Yeah.
So this thing really ticks me off, because I'm telling people to go here for emotional support, and what they're going to get is a whole crap load of spam. So I'm going to actually post this. Also, I'm going to type this in and post it at the top so that they are, you know, warned in advance. What it says is, Yahoo has apparently made a sneaky change to the marketing preferences of all subscribers to mailing lists on yahoogroups.com, changing all their no's to yes. The result will be not only a load of spam, but also junk mail and even junk phone calls if your address or phone number are on file with Yahoo. And believe you me, as soon as I get home,
not
I'll
New
be
York.
Checking mine.
Tell you what, not New
not
York.
New York.
Not
New York. Tell you what. To
bring
change
the SmackDown.
There's something so wrong about someone as wholesome and full of granola as yourself saying, "I'm going to bring the SmackDown."
Hey, I'm a Wookiee.
To change them back, go to Yahoo Groups, http://groups.yahoo.com, and sign in. Go to My Groups and click on Account Info. Verify your password if it asks you to, and your Yahoo ID card comes up. Click on Edit Your Marketing Preferences and change all those yeses back to no's. Click Save Changes. Okay, here's further info on it. Yahoo users fume over spam switch. Yahoo users fume over spam switch by Jim Hu. Okay. Sorry, I did not realize it was the same as the header. Okay, some Yahoo members on Friday reacted angrily to changes in the web portal's email marketing practices, comparing the company's revised policy to an open invitation to spam. I never received any notification about this from Yahoo, one annoyed reader wrote in an email to CNetNews.com. I was merely lucky enough to have a friend warn me about it. The ire stems from changes in Yahoo's marketing preferences page, which the company uses to secure permission to send service promotions. Along with other changes to the page, Yahoo said it had reset the default preferences for all members in a way that would require them to manually request that the company block the messages in the future, even if they had declined to accept such email in the past. So I'll be sure to post this up on my website at the very top of the group email support group
page. Isn't Yahoo hurting now for business because, like, Google's taken over? More people are going over to Google or something?
Well,
they've diversified, though.
Well, the thing of it is, yeah, they've diversified very great deal, and Google is still basically a search engine.
Yeah.
Mind you, it's an ass-kicking search engine, but it's still a search engine, and it doesn't really do much of anything else.
Yeah, there's no, like, Britney clubs on Google.
Right, exactly. The only thing that has on Alta Vista that's got groups in it is stuff to search Usenet news groups.
And I doubt you could find remote tropical islands or sentient dolphins on Google.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I don't know. You could probably if you
didn't
put
catch
your mind
the,
to it.
The Yahoo commercial.
Yeah, I've seen the one. I know the one you're talking. It just took me a second because of I don't actually watch that much TV.
I missed the Yahoo commercial.
Basically, there's a guy in this beautiful remote island, and he's in the sparkling water, and he's just wandering around the water, and he sees this dolphin come up, and the dolphin's like, "Hey, where'd you find this place?" It's talking dolphin. And he's like, "Yahoo." And then he's like, the dolphin starts swimming away, and the guy's like, no, wait. How did you learn to talk? And the dolphin's like, Yahoo. But soon as the dolphin's going to be like, spam email.
Oh, man. Okay. Okay. So, now you were saying, not in New York... And, of course, the primary...
because Granola Boy here is going to bring the smackdown if they bring it to New York.
Well, no, the thing of it is, New York's got this no telemarketing registry where you're supposed to... People who don't like their name on lists are supposed to put their names on this list so that their name doesn't go on another list. Kind of defies logic a little bit, but at any rate... I put my name on the list, and the calls have slowed down. They haven't stopped completely, but unfortunately, the ones that are left are the more obnoxious ones. Anyway, this one I thought interesting. This was in the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. Ben Schroeder, a Magnolia paralegal and live music webmaster who hates telemarketing calls, knows that holding companies accountable can be a long, weary struggle. So he was stunned when his email complaining about an automated message left on his answering machine yielded a $500 check and an apology 2 weeks later. Usually you have to at least file a suit before they're going to pay up, said Schroeder incredulously. Under state law, automated dialing and announcing devices that dial a residence and play a recorded message for the purposes of commercial solicitation are illegal, and residents who get such calls are entitled to damages of at least $500 per call. The federal law is similar, said Paula Sellis, the senior counsel in the state attorney general's office. Sellis said that she was amazed at the quick response from the company behind the calls, DHS Enterprises of South Euclid, Ohio. So was Ben Livingston, one of the state's leading battlers against automated dialers, spam, and junk fax. I don't think it's ever been that simple for me, says Livingston, who says he's collected $2,650 for illegal spam fax and automated calls in the past year. Schroeder's check cleared yesterday. Party at my place, he chortled.
All the pizza you want.
The automated call Schroeder got on March 15th was on behalf of a website, yourhomecareer.com, which invites consumers to pay $36 to learn the secret of earning money by working at home. A homepage testimonial says that Anthony P., a former corporate employee, now works from home and earns over $35,000 per month. Schroeder, who already works at home and consequently hates telemarketing calls more than the average person, is dubious about the site's promises. The phone at DHS Enterprises was perpetually busy, and the company could not be reached.
For those who are interested, that is the Foley version of a penny slipping into a Mountain Dew can.
Right.
Sticky piggy bank.
Delivered the certified mail to Schroeder last week, his first thought was, oh my God, this guy's going to sue me now. He hesitated about signing for the letter, but decided to take the plunge. 5 minutes after seeing the $500 check, Schroeder was heading to the bank to cash it. Then he emailed and called family and friends to exult about it.
Nice.
Washington State is one of 21 states that defended the law's constitutionality before the U.S. Supreme Court in the 1993 case, and the court upheld it. We've not seen an increase in illegal calls recently, said Sellis. They come and they go. Washington consumers are remarkably savvy in that when they do start coming in, we do start getting complaints. The spur for the 1986 law, said Sellis, is that in some cases people cannot hang up on pre-recorded messages which prevented them from making emergency calls or conducting their business. Schroeder's email message to DHS was short, but not especially sweet. Quote, this email is to notify you that I received an invasive and illegal automated telephone solicitation this afternoon from your company, DHS Enterprises, or Your Home Careers. The use of automatic dialing and announcing devices in Washington State to Washington State residents is illegal. Your company now owes me $500 by state law. I have preserved the message that was left on my answering machine as proof for the court. Schroeder included a copy of the law in his email and also included a CC to an assistant attorney general who is a friend of Schroeder's but who has nothing to do with consumer protection or telecommunication. My thinking is that when they received this and they saw that I had CC'd a real person in the AG's office, they might have thought, you know, we really don't need the AG from any state breathing down our necks right now because we've got these $36 payments coming in. Schroeder says he got the inspiration to pursue the call from reading about Livingston's successes. Livingston, vice president of Innovative Access, as a Ballard internet service provider, says that he won judgments or settlements of more than $9,000 for illegal spam, telemarketing, and junk faxes, of which he succeeded in collecting $2,650. My advice would be to take action, he says. In the case of junk faxes and telemarketing, it's quite possible in the foreseeable future that you can cut down a lot of this stuff. In the longer term sense, I think it's also true with email spam. If people don't take action, nobody's going to stop doing it.
You know, I think I've just found the new source for funding for my agency.
How's that?
Because we get so many faxes, so many junk faxes, and so much spam that all we have to do is just chase after him like that fella did.
Now, how much did he... Was he awarded from... Well,
bring the Mental Health Association into the 21st century.
Schroeder got $500.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but it was on one attempt, and it wasn't even really a very heavily armed attempt.
Yeah.
It's just that he happened to, or it seems...
He hit the right
happened
cord.
Happened to CC the right person.
Mm. I don't know. I find a lot of times fighting telemarketers is best done by... Playing the same game right back at him.
They had like a fella. They had a phony phone call fella on Howard Stern the other day that did that. That he just kept trying to sell this one guy that was trying to sell him something.
Well, that's what I did.
That's what he did, and he's just like, yeah, I'm gonna be. I've just found out that I've only got till Christmas to live, so I'm trying to get rid of all my stuff so my family's not bogged down with it. And he won't let the guy off the phone. He's like, well, I also have a microwave. Do you want that? Do you want that? I'll give it to you for $20. And the guy tries to get off the phone. He's like, dude, I've got to get, no, I've got a motor. I've got a motor. Or, no, he said, I've got a jet. That's what he kept saying. Dude, I've got a jet. And the guy just keeps going, I've got a blender. I'll give you that for $10. And he just keeps listing his possessions one by one.
Somebody called.
What he'll charge for them.
Somebody called me trying to sell me like these vacation packages in New Hampshire or something like that. And, I happen to work for a web hosting company. And I start asking them lots of needless questions about their company, and then I'm like, oh, do you guys got to have a website I can check out more about them? They're like, no, we don't have a website. I'm like, oh, really? Like, would you be interested in one? And they started giving them the whole sales pitch on, like, how it could help their business. And they're like, no, that's okay. And they're like, I just kept going at it. My favorite is when the Times Union calls trying to sell me newspaper subscriptions, and I always just politely decline. They're like, no, I already enjoy your website. And they're like, and they still persist. They're like, but you can get, like, a month subscription for blah, 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 and we'll throw in this. And then I just turn around and I'm like, don't you care about the trees?
Oh, that's a good one.
You could always do what Michael Moore did. He, for a week, he had somebody call the CEO of a big telemarketing company at, like, 3-4 in the morning every night.
You got to track them down first, but if you get the number.
Well, no, that's not his first. That's not his first case of a culture jam or righteous revenge or whatever you may want to call it. There was another stunt. I think it was Michael Moore who did this one. Also, got a whole bunch of people to take cars that had car alarms on them,
yeah.
Park them in a circle around the owner, around the CEO. Of a
same segment, I remember.
Of a company that made car alarms and set them all off at about 4 in the morning.
This is like in the back roads of this suburban New Jersey town where the guy lived, and he just set up a line of like 7 cars.
Yeah.
The Foley edition. Little brother.
Okay.
Alrighty then. Okay, my next story. Here we go. This is a reply to another story, but I like the title. It says, Loosing Its Grammar Skills, and it's got everything apostrophes and misspelled and whatnot. Which is one of my biggest pet peeves. I can't even begin to tell you how much I hate it.
Oh, I know exactly what you mean.
Oh, yeah. I also paid attention in English class in elementary school.
I wandered
basic English grammar.
I have actually wandered into pizza places where I've seen 2 slice apostrophe S.
Mm.
And gone up to the how they have those things, letters, so they move the letters around on the sign? And steal the apostrophe.
Yeah.
I put it up in the corner so it was out of the way. But the point of it is, it didn't belong there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It did belong to the slice.
I've also noticed difficulties.
Hence the apostrophe.
I I'm seeing, you know, problems with the...
Well, then the apostrophe belonged after the S because it was more than one slice.
Plural. I've seen problems with plural in grammar in, like, Chinese restaurants, but at least then you know, like...
English is not the native language.
English is not their first language, and they have an excuse, like in a pizza place.
How do you know they're not just, like, lisping on the sign?
You want to... Actually, you want to hear the real winner? I had an English teacher who was...
WRPI would like to take a moment to state that they love the people of China, and Fong is just being a pest.
I had an English teacher in college who was... We were going over the requirements for a report that we had to write, and she was going on, and then she says, "Oh, and make sure that the grammar is correct. This is English class. You're going to be graded on it." At one point in time, I had somebody hand me in a report about the poet Yeats, and every reference to Yeats was spelled Y-E-A-T apostrophe S. This person got an F.
Once in English class, we had been reading the Shakespeare play Hamlet, but I had just seen the movie to Macbeth, and I got them both confused on the test, and every single answer said Macbeth instead of Hamlet. But she was nice because she had loaned me the Macbeth movie, so she knew that I had... So she let me get off with it. But yeah, I don't remember... I remember social studies teachers even greeting you if you got your grammar wrong, because my social studies teacher, you know, believed in teaching people how to speak their own language. Mm. Okay, so here we go.
Yeah.
The current discussion on spelling / grammar prompts me to add some comments from my personal first-hand perspective on the issue. I was the original developer of one of the first successful commercial grammar checkers, Grammatic. The major development of grammar checkers was at its peak in the late 1980s and early 1990s. One of the most distressing things to me is the fact that the quality of both spelling and grammar checking software available today is no better than it was almost 10 years ago. How did this happen? It may be hard to remember, but as recently as 1993 or 1994, you still had a real choice of what word processor you used. Today, Microsoft has a virtual monopoly with Word. In 1992, Microsoft decided that the state of grammar checking had gotten both good and essential enough that one should be integrated with Word. This decision has had many effects on the state of grammar checking. In 1992, there were at least four grammar checkers available that could be considered state-of-the-art or nearly so. Microsoft chose one, and WordPerfect followed their lead by acquiring my company. The other companies faded into oblivion, with the ultimate result that after a couple of years, there was no major new R&D going on with English grammar checking, to the best of my knowledge. Because of this chain of events, the grammar checker you get today in Word is not significantly better than the grammar checker you might have used almost 10 years ago. This is really sad because we were making great improvements in the quality and accuracy of the software, and had the development continued, there is little doubt that many of the deficiencies of the grammar checking would have been overcome. Unfortunately, as long as Microsoft considers the current grammar checking good enough, and as long as Word remains the dominant word processor, there will be little or no incentive for anyone to independently develop better grammar checkers. The risk in this, monopoly and complacency. This note has been spell checked, but not grammar checked. No grammar checking available for my email software.
No grammar checkers were harmed in the making of this email.
Film. Yes.
That is kind of freaky, actually. I would have to admit that I haven't really given that much thought to the some of the inner details of Microsoft's products. I mean, I know I slam Microsoft frequently, but my biggest complaint against them is that it crashes twice a day and people just accept this because they've been brainwashed that this is normal.
What about Star Office?
Well,
and
it
Linux?
Is normal when you run Windows.
Yeah, it is. Star Office, I don't.
Do they have some kind of dev grammar checker in there? Or?
To be honest with you, I don't know. I haven't attempted to make it run. Or that's not true. I made a half-hearted attempt to make it run, but I didn't really dig into it very deep. I put it up on the machine, said, "Oh, wow, that looks cool," and then uninstalled it because I didn't really need it and it was taking up too much space. I don't know. I got enough space now. I could probably pull it off. All right. We're at the bottom of the hour. Hey, we have a phone call. Let's see who's there. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Oh, my God. I didn't want to be on the air. I just wanted to pass on a simple compliment.
All right.
Hey, I've been listening to you guys since, like, 78. Obviously, longer than a few of you guys have been in school. And I just wanted to say it's been great since 78. Keep it up.
All right. Thank you very much on behalf of WRPI.
Rock on with your bad self.
Boy, 78, man. What was I, 2 then?
Yes, 78. You were.
Damn. Yes, that is longer than I have been in school.
Okay. Well, that's definitely humbling to know that you're a part of something that's bigger than you. And that's great to hear people call in and thank us every now and then. If you want to call in for any reason, whether to thank us or to just talk to us, please feel free to do so. The number here is 518-276-6248. We're going to take a quick break here, and when we return, we will still be here.
Very
wherever
eloquent.
You go, there you
he's
are.
He's a smooth talker. At Chuck Ritter, he's a smooth talker.
There we go.
Sticky piggy bank.
Once again, the staff and management of WRPI proudly present How to Tell WRPI from All the Other Radio Stations Ever.
Reason number 3.14159. Interesting technical information.
Words manifest and disintegrate. Particles drift into atoms and separate. Developing a movement known as sound waves that travel at Mach 1 via the airspace. Hitting the microphone, making it vibrate. Electrical impulse start to migrate along the wires to enter the next phase of audio sequence. The infamous noise gate lifts over the threshold that enter the system. Goals matter, not converted to data. Knowledge is primary, communication is digital. Language is binary, from the bit to the megabyte. Math is the mode to educate the neophyte. Science is the road to greater understanding. A complex network always expanding, growing by the minute. Realm of broadcast, borders are infinite. Signals energized and ready for transmit. Working its way up the tower several times an hour, getting power rotation. Zero static on the air. Receivers are fine-tuned, perception is clear. Courtesy of fiber optics, the highs are bright, the lows kick.
Join us next time as we bring you more of How to Tell WRPI from All the Other Radio Stations Ever. A seemingly endless saga brought to you as a public service by WRPI in Troy.
Just like my father and mother.
What can I do for you, sir?
This fried rice stinks.
Oh, yeah? No problem. You don't like my rice? You don't like my rice? What's wrong with the food? It is beautiful for me. What's wrong with the food?
This fried rice stinks.
What's wrong with the food?
This fried rice stinks.
You don't like my rice?
need.
You're listening to 91.5 FM WRPI. The show is Little Brother. We'll be back momentarily. It is ungodly hot in the studio this afternoon, so we're kind of taking a quick moment here to cool off outside, and we'll be back in a couple more minutes. Here's some Drayoc by request. This is a show about technology. I should point out that this is by request of Drayoc.
I've got a steel plate in my head. I've got a steel plate in my head.
There's a first aid kit in the next room.
I've got a steel plate in my head from Vietnam.
Sorry.
Okay. We have a caller on the line.
Look out.
This is recording. Oh, it's that bonehead said he was in Vietnam. He must be on drugs.
Colum, are you on drugs?
Yes.
Yes. He don't know first thing about Vietnam. He must be on drugs.
Yes.
Okay.
Don't bank where ass monkeys bank.
Sound advice. And you are listening to 91.5 FM WRPI in Troy. Going into the last segment here of Little Brother. And need to remind you, as always, that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, not necessarily those of the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, WRPI staff or management, or the Rensselaer Student Union, all that, shoot, I hate when that happens. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request airtime for a rebuttal. If you'd like to throw in your 2 cents worth, please feel free to do so. Area code 518-276-6248. That number again, slowly, is 518-276-6248. Also, you can send email critter@verizoneatspoop.com. That address again, critter@verizoneatspoop.com. And lastly, you can send snail mail. Send it to Chuck Ritter, care of WRPI, 1 WRPI Plaza, Box 31, Troy, New York, 12180. So who wants to take the next one?
I've been eyeing this story the whole show.
All right, go for it.
High-profile anti-Unix site runs Unix.
Oh, we have the wayout.com.
Before I even start with this, I just got to say, isn't being anti-Unix like being anti-puppy?
Some people are anti-puppy,
it's like,
you know.
I don't know, being a staunch supporter of cheerleaders' rights or...
Now, some people like cheerleaders.
Cheerleaders do have rights, but you know, they can support their own rights.
I only once in my life have I met an actual living, breathing Microsoft weenie. I mean, you know, not an MCSE. I mean, an actual Microsoft weenie. He had a Microsoft backpack that he ran around with.
Other than
him, I didn't know they exist, but apparently there are others. A website sponsored by Microsoft and Unisys as a way to steer big companies away from the Unix operating system is itself powered by Unix software. The site, dubbed We Have the Way Out, runs on web servers powered by FreeBSD, an open source version of Unix, along with the Unix-based web server Apache, according to Netcraft, which tracks website information. Both pieces of software compete with Microsoft's Windows operating system. The Microsoft Unisys site solicits names and contact information in exchange for research reports on data center trends. Representatives at Unisys and Microsoft weren't immediately available for comment.
Imagine that.
The marketing site's use of Unix comes as Microsoft works to get a greater foothold on its Windows operating system, for its Windows operating system, in the enterprise computing market, where Unix is well entrenched. Unisys partnered with Microsoft to co-market its large server hardware running Windows as a Unix alternative. The website is just part of Microsoft.
We got a caller.
Oh.
Hello.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yes. Are you taking callers?
We are. And you are on the air.
Okay. Well, look, I want to make sure my radio's turned down.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no problems. I really like the techno type of thing, but I'm very fearful for the future because of the deteriorating social fiber, like graffiti and gang affiliation, the deterioration of language.
Well, these are valid concerns, but my particular thought had been that, for the most part, that there was a lot of coverage of this type of issue, and in my particular case, it's something I don't have any real expertise with. So I take off and do something.
It's a form of negative revolution from within. It's a false pride, self-will run riot. They're the modern-day Vandals and Visigoths of our American society. We're being attacked from the outside and from the inside simultaneously.
Well, you won't get any argument from me on that front. I think you're absolutely right, but the thing of it is, I like I said, I haven't got the expertise to talk about these issues.
Do you think that technology can save us? I mean, with surveillance and security and national ID cards.
Oh, no.
No.
Right-sized chips implanted under the skin so people can be followed.
No, I don't believe this is the case.
Have you ever seen the movie Invaders from Mars?
There have been a lot of movies that fit that general title.
I've seen Mars Attacks.
Yeah, well, there's one called Invaders from Mars where they actually, it's a real classic kind of B-grade science fiction film. They implant a diode or something in the back of the person's, like, in their cerebral cortex or something, and they're controlled. It's kind of like the Kurt Vonnegut novel, I think it's called Sirens of Titan, where they do the same type of thing. And it made me think how prophetic that these movies were. Things like Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek, the flip phone, the voice recognition software. I think some of our greatest modern-day prophets science fiction authors, don't you think?
Yes. There you won't get much argument from me. I would say that if you wanted to give prophecy points to various science fiction
to various Frankenstein, the way she thought about the Industrial Revolution as being a harbinger of monstrous depravity.
Well, that's true. Of course, in that case, it was more of a metaphorical sense because, of course, she had an actual creature made out of
But if you want to shoot for literal, the one that I would put my money on is William Gibson.
Wayne Gibson. Okay, I'll have to make sure I check some of that out. Well, look, thank you for letting me talk to you. I really enjoy listening to RPI because it's a very diverse radio station. There's just about everybody's represented on your airwaves, and I'm going to be looking forward to listening to your show in the future. Thank you.
All right, take care.
Love you,
and
babe.
For those of you who didn't recognize that, that was Bill Gates. Thank you.
No.
Maybe Steve Ballmer. Developers.
Don't get me started there. if you want to throw your 2 cents worth in, 518-276-6248. I had told you, you guys are already paid up.
He never does tire of that gag. Never. So Fungaboo, you were saying what now?
Oh, let's see.
You are reading the anti-puppy story.
The anti-puppy. Microsoft hates puppies.
Bill Gates eats them for supper.
Okay, we're talking about a marketing site promoting Microsoft Enterprise servers as an alternative to Unix, which happened to be, the site itself is run on a Unix-based web server. The marketing site's use of Unix comes as Microsoft works to get a greater foothold for its Windows operating system in the enterprise computing market, where Unix is well entrenched. Unisys partnered with Microsoft to co-market its large server hardware running Windows as a Unix alternative. The website is just part of Microsoft's renewed marketing and advertising campaign to undermine Unix, the operating system at the heart of the operating system at the heart of powerful server lines from rivals Sun Microsystems, IBM, and Hewlett-Packard. Unisys is spending $25 million on the campaign. Microsoft is adding funding of its own, but has declined to say how much. The We Have the Way Out campaign describes Unix as an expensive trap. One reads, quote, "No wonder Unix makes you feel boxed in. It ties you to an inflexible system. It requires you to pay for expensive experts. It makes you struggle daily with a server environment that's more complex than ever." Than ever. The same ad depicts a scene in which a computer user has painted himself into a corner with purple paint. Sun servers are manufactured in a shade of purple similar to that in the ad.
I think they're mixing Sun up with, what's the other one? Silicon Graphics.
Yeah, Suns are usually pretty beige.
Pretty white,
right?
Yeah.
Actually, I think they have like purple corners.
Oh, do they?
A couple I've played with.
They might, yeah.
The 18-month project will include advertisements, technical sales efforts, and other marketing work plugging Unisys's. There we go.
Unisys.
Should there be another S in there?
Yes, there should.
Technically,
not necessarily.
Unisys. Unisys.
No, there's Unisys and just an apostrophe.
An apostrophe. It depends on how you like to say it. It's like, it's like saying hypothesis or hypotheses or I don't know. No,
well,
wait,
the question
plural.
Here would be whether or not the word Unisys is singular or plural.
Unisai.
Well, what does the last S stand for?
It's part of an acronym for
sausage.
Something.
Are you sure, or is it Una, and then the SYS is just short for systems, or
that's
something?
That's what I'm
like
thinking.
That.
It's short for sissies.
Unisissies. So it might already be plural. And don't mind us, audience. We're just letting the heat get to us. We're all sucking down Coke, so we've had a lot of caffeine here.
The 18-month project will include advertisements, technical sales efforts, and other marketing work plugging Unisys's high-end server and Microsoft's top-end version of Windows, two products that so far have made only their first steps into the data centers where high-end servers often reside. The Unisys ES7000 server can accommodate as many as 32 Intel processors and can be divided into independent partitions, each with its own operating system. And it can take over the ship if the crew becomes unable.
Yes, however...
Can it separate the saucer from the body of the ship?
You have to be careful, though, because of the fact that if you cut off its power supply, it may find alternate routes through crew members.
The data center version of Windows 2000 can...
What are you doing, Fong? I'm sorry, I can't do that, Fong.
I'm sorry, Fong. I'm afraid I can't do that. Copyright infringement.
Right here right by here. My club soda bottle.
My God, it's full of memory holes.
Copyright infringement inside the club soda bottle.
Rub my face. Fong will never make it through this story.
You don't have a face, Hal. The data center version of Windows 2000 can run on machines with as many as 32 processors. These top-end configurations are rare, Unisys has said, with 8, 12, or 16 processor partitions more common. Comments?
That's the end of the story?
Yeah. Oh, that's it.
That's
oh.
It.
Oh. Okay. It was so long in coming, we had
and
no idea when it hit us.
In the end.
Hmm. What was the point of it now?
The point of it is that Microsoft does not eat their own dog food.
You know, as a matter of fact, Microsoft doesn't even like dog food.
Let them eat cake.
The point of it is Microsoft put up this website in an attempt to get people to move off of Unix onto onto their own platform.
But they're on Unix.
They're on Unix. And, you know, it's an interesting thing because shortly after that story came out, another one appeared where there was an outage on the site. Mm. And guess what caused the outage?
Uh-oh.
It was a muffed...
Microsoft?
It was a muffed attempt to move the server over to IIS. Just like what happened to Hotmail.
I don't know. Do you have any conjecture as to why they would even dare put such a site up on a FreeBSD Apache server?
I don't think that they realized that anybody out there would have the savvy to look it up.
Well, I mean, I'm imagining that, like, contractors involved, something like that. I don't know. Like, why...
I don't know. I'll tell you something. I have known a couple of people who have worked for Microsoft, and a lot of these the reports I'm hearing is that a lot of these people just kind of hold their noses when they walk in the office in the morning.
Hmm.
You know, as long as the paycheck keeps coming.
Gotcha.
I don't know if I don't know if I could ever do it. I hope I don't have to find out, because I really don't want to work for them. Anyway. Did you have one, or you want me to take one?
I have one. It says, Feds target online scammers and spammers from Washington. Professional hucksters and online snake oil salesmen best aware of the federal government, which is eyeing the internet for scammers and spammers and has already started a series of crackdowns on con artists bilking millions from innocent consumers. The Federal Trade Commission announced Tuesday that... it has created a nationwide task force that has already brought 63 law enforcement actions against web-based scams, ranging from auction frauds to bogus cancer-curing sites. Ooh. I think all of us have found something in our email that is highly suspect, said Eileen Harrington, Associate Director of the FTC Bureau of Consumer Affairs. They may be subject to law enforcement. The FTC is working with state attorneys general and administrators as well as four Canadian law enforcement agencies to restore law and order on the internet, said Washington State Attorney General Christine Gregoire. Cyberspace is a wondrous place. Oh, that's like a little poem. Cyberspace is a wondrous place. It sounds like something that should be like on a children's thing, and then they go into this whole
actually,
song.
Actually, you know, it
cyberspace
sounds like a,
should be a wondrous
it sounds
place.
Like a line from Cats, actually,
or something. Yeah. Okay.
Or a Jesse Jackson speech.
Not anymore. Napster got shut down. Remember?
Yeah, but Nutella is still out there. Cyberspace is a wondrous place, but we are quickly learning it can be a dangerous place for the unwary. She said. Con artists who once relied on telephone boiler rooms and mass mailings can now rip people off through websites and email. And for a lot cheaper, too, I might add. Responding from thousands of consumer complaints.
Ripping off.
Foley.
Oh, okay, yes, this is the Foley episode.
Foley.
Of Little Brother. Responding from thousands of consumer complaints, Washington State is taking criminal action against a scheme in which customers who paid money for musical instruments were ripped off and abused when they complained, a work-at-home arrangement that was really a fraudulent pyramid scheme, and a website that, who's surprised that the pyramid schemes have gone online? Anybody? Not me.
No.
And a website that took consumers' money in return for a so-called cancer cure. In addition, the FTC, whose staff has surfed the web, pored over consumer complaints, and checked out the spam the agency gets in its own email inboxes, has targeted Universal Direct, which allegedly promised participants $10,000 in cash gifts if they invested $5 in an email chain letter.
And a Huffy bike.
the bike. They are also going after Sound City 2000 Incorporated, which took money from customers over the internet for compact discs and delivered them late or not at all with no refunds.
It's kind of like Columbia House in reverse.
Yeah. One of the alleged scammers the government is investigating is David L. Walker, who is said to have charged between $2,400 and $5,200 on his website for a cancer treatment hoax. The government charges Walker's online boasts about his project were unsubstantiated and potentially harmful to cancer patients. One victim Tuesday described the anguish Walker's website caused his family. As we read the website, we had hope. Up to this point, there was no hope, said a visibly distraught Peter Fulton, a Washington resident whose wife had been diagnosed with inoperable cancer. They had purchased Walker's so-called treatment. There was no effect whatsoever, he said. Harrington said the government will continue to crack down on such schemes, but also warned direct marketers that they aren't going to stand for any kind of fraudulent spam or unwanted email solicitations. They have trained 1,700 state, federal, and international agents to monitor solicitations, and what they found so far isn't encouraging, she said. In a study of 215 email solicitations that offered the remove me option for addresses to get off the mailing list, 135 of the links were dead or did not function. The FTC is now sending these solicitors threatening letters to tell them it means business. The FTC and its law enforcement partners are sending a signal to the scammer. We're out there surfing the net, reading our spam, and working together to stop internet scams, said J. Howard Beals III, director of the FTC's Bureau of Consumer Protection.
You know, this guy offering the cancer cure there, for a price, of course, in my humble but correct opinion, is beyond scum. Mm. Here we have somebody who not only is taking people's money and not providing the goods, but they're doing it to people who are scratching for any hope at all. They're taking advantage of people who can't take this any further. This guy is beyond scum. Scum is too good for him.
And he hates puppies to boot.
And he probably hates puppies.
And if you would like to learn how to reverse the aging process, go to... Actually, we should probably pass out our radio station web address in case people want to download past shows.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll throw a couple of web addresses out here. WRPI can be heard live on the web if you are outside of the range of our transmitter or just barely in range and can kind of hear us, but not really very well. www.wrpi.edu has a link to a real audio feed that'll bring you this show and all of the others that are here at WRPI. Also, past episodes of this show can be downloaded at www.radiocritter.com.
And for those of you who could barely hear us, this station can be listened to at www.radiocritter.com.
What he said. Yeah, it's .org.
You said edu.
Oh, I said edu?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's www.wrpi.org, not edu.
Org.
Although you can also...
I love
all right. Enough. I guess we're going to have to wrap this one up to a close. The heat has finally gotten to our brains and fried us all.
Now I have to go to the... Damn.
Jeez.
So on that note...
And thus concludes the Foley episode of Little Brother.
Thank God. And on that note, we're going to close...
Whoa! Flying pennies!
Yeah. You threw in your 2 cents worth. Very funny. On that note, we're going to close it with some more music from the Droplift Project. You've been listening to Little Brother Episode 41 on 91.5 FM, WRPI, Troy, or wherever else you may have been listening to it.
If the music you hear sounds a little peculiar, it is because it is coming to you in a very, very narrow frequency range. This is the way recorded music sounded in the early days of the phonograph, around 1915 or 1920. This frequency range is the best that the equipment of that period could reproduce.
Angels are strong, stronger than you or I, or the strongest man on earth. But they are not as strong as God. God could be anything.